Hello, all you cynics out there. Just before episode 81 starts, I want to give everyone a heads up that we did have a bit of technical issues with the recording of this episode. Shan lost audio, Twitch cut me out, and we had to patch everything together kind of on the fly. So if you notice any technical hiccups in this episode, and that's partly the reason why this episode's releasing late, it's due to those issues. But please enjoy episode 81 of the Split Screen Cynics. What is good, everybody? Welcome back once again to another exciting episode of the Split Screen Cynics, the number one place that you choose to come to talk about all things video games, the stuff you love about them, things you hate about them, the occasional conspiracy theory that we stumble into and take wild tangents on, and generally everything in between. Thank you so much for joining us. I am just one of your humble hosts. My name is Berto, and I have the pleasure of doing this fantastic show with three of the most amazing people that I know. Garrett, you missed our last episode where we had a wild time talking about Fotion. What have you been up to? And what are your thoughts on the game?
So, number one, that week I was up to having no internet and cell service to that like kind of weird hurricane that rolled through New York, which was weird because then I read that it might have been a fiber cut in Brooklyn, apparently, was the reason why Verizon was out. I have no idea. Otherwise, good. A lot of like school stuff, which is cool. Back into programming, I'm digging that. I did play a decent amount of video games, which is exciting. Devotion. I don't want to take too long on this. I liked it. I enjoyed it. But I think it has similar problems to games like Amnesia for me, where the actual gameplay itself is like, it's kind of like a bit of a walking simulator, which is, I get it. I completely understand it. And I like that in horror games. Like I understand the idea and the concept of doing that, but they always leave me lacking a little bit. Like at the end, I always feel a little deflated. And I felt the same way with Amnesia. Like Amnesia has, I think, some of the best atmosphere in horror games like that I've played. But at the end of it, you just kind of feel like, I wish there was just like a little bit more to this. And I think that's a bit of an issue with the horror genre in itself, is that like making the player not able to react really, aside from, you know, I'm saying all games, like giving the player too much ability to react or fight, or having too much gameplay feels like an action game, and giving them too little makes me like give up. Like I'm not really scared anymore, and the atmosphere kind of breaks a little bit. So a little bit nitpicky. I did enjoy it. Right. I think it was like well made enough. Just
we'll that standard. Definitely get your full thoughts on the game, because Shan and I we took a deep dive into it last episode, and we missed.
I missed
your guys' input. Obviously, we did have the issue with the hurricane that hit here in the Northeast. That if you looked at the news when that happened, New York City and all the surrounding areas in the Metro New York area were underwater. So that was fun. But we'll definitely get your take on that when we start talking about the What You Playing, because Shan and I, we definitely wanted to hear what yourself and Tim
can't not say anything about it.
we need your unbridled feedback. And speaking of, you heard me mention his name just now, Tim. We also missed you. How have you been, bud?
I've been all right. I will save my devotion commentary for, I suppose, the What You're Playing segment. But not too much going on. I did survive the mania of the weather relatively unscathed. It was kind of crazy over here. Garrett actually stopped by at one point in the thick of it.
Internet.
Siphoned some internet from my house. And he saw how crazy, because I live right by the river. So how, you know, the aftermath, at least, of how crazy we were affected by that. But relatively unscathed. So just slowly easing my way into the season of autumn. And hopefully we'll continue to get cooler, because it's still too hot as far as I'm concerned.
Agreed.
And how's the weather out west? You haven't been dealing with hurricanes, but Garrett mentioned before we started recording that there might be some wildfires going on that might have led to the reason why our weather was so hazy today. Any truth to that claim?
Or that guy at the bar made that up.
Or is Garrett's friend at the bar completely full of shit?
No, I mean, pasta. California really is always on fire. I mean, I think it was last week. I don't know. Either last week or 2 weeks ago, I was stuck in traffic for like 3.5 hours because there was a wildfire like right off the highway. So I got to see a whole, you know, Cal Fire freaking, you know, firefighting hero shit. I don't know. It was cool. I guess they like, you know, manage their own airspace and stuff. There's like fucking a bunch of air assets up in the air at a time to deal with these wildfires because they just happen constantly. But yeah, the earth is dying. So what else is new?
There is that. Funny enough, that's everything we've talked about so far is about that.
On that note, with the earth dying and wildfires and hurricanes, I mean, if you need any more proof that climate change is real, just
escape.
Listen to the Split Screen Cynics podcast. We will break it down for you how climate change is a real thing. But aside from that, let's talk about video games. We're your Split Screen Cynics. Thank you. Cynics? Split. Wow. Split Screen Cynics. We are the best place to come to talk about all things video games. If you're listening to us right now, thank you so much. You know where to find us. We're already appearing on your weekly feeds, be it on your iPhone, on your Android phone, if you're listening to us on your computer and your Alexa app, whatever you're listening to us on, thank you so much. We appreciate your patronage. Toss a coin to your Witcher and maybe to us by sending us a subscription on Twitch. If you have Amazon Prime, you know what? Link it. Your Twitch, and you get a free subscription, so send it our way because we'd appreciate that. Also, you know, if you happen to feel more generous, you can leave us a comment, give us 5 stars on your podcasting application of choice. That would greatly help us. And aside from that, we appreciate everything you do for us. And with that spiel out of the way, let's get into the nitty-gritty of what you guys thought about Devotion since we missed your takes last week. Garrett, you started giving us a little bit of your impressions. Let's get a little bit more of what you thought of Devotion and any other games you might have been playing.
Yeah. Like kind of what I was saying, it's funny. I feel like I always focus on the negative in reviews. And I did like Devotion a lot. I thought it was interesting. I thought like the story, I was surprised at like the shifts in tone at points. I thought it was like pretty well laid out, and I feel like the game didn't overstay its welcome, which is really good. The kind of chase scene at the end, I was like, eh.
How long did it take you to finish?
It's not on Steam, so I have no way to track it. I would estimate 3 to 5 hours, but I'm not, maybe two. Yeah, probably like, I want to say like 4 hours.
That seems about the standard.
Yeah. Maybe it was like three.
Like 4.5 hours, I think.
Okay, I did it, like, I basically did it in one setting, which is interesting because I do wonder if that affects my judgment in video games, like, sitting down and playing straight through it without coming back to it at all. It's, these kind of games are tough for me just because, again, like I said, like, lack of gameplay for me is tough to ignore in video games. And especially, like, this one, I didn't think it was, like, super scary, which is kind of what I want in a game like this. Like, again, like Amnesia, because it was super scary, I really liked it, and I was kind of able to get over the sort of not like super actiony gameplay or something like that, because to me the gameplay should make you feel scared a little bit. I think that's the genius of video games, is that it's a medium that allows you to feel scared just because you're in it. And while again this game does a lot of great stuff, I like the puzzle solving, I kind of like the story it was telling, but yeah, I don't know, like it wasn't like I didn't think it was the best example of the genre, if you will, but still, like, I would give it like a 7 out of 10. I enjoyed it. That's my like kind of short short review, if you will. What did you guys I was trying to segue to Tim, what did you think? I was like doing the episode over, sorry.
I would say that my opinion is probably a little bit less favorable. I'd actually already played the other Red Candle Games game, Detention, which was a different format. It was like a side scroller, more like, but it was still mostly conceptually the same. But I found the story in detention to be a lot more interesting. And while I wouldn't say either game was particularly scary, I guess, like I never really felt fear when playing them. I would say it was a little bit, it was more conceptually disturbing. There were a couple moments, like there was the one moment in Devotion where you're like ripping your tongue out and stuff like that, which was, I guess, like disturbing and on like a, like it's unsettling to like witness that, I guess, but it wasn't disturbing in like a, like, you know, emotionally, like a, like in a horror sense, I guess, in a way that, that I look for when I'm looking for disturbing. That's like, I guess, like almost like the torture porn sort of thing.
Right? I guess like, it just comes to like a fundamental difference in like how we all consume our horror media, mm-hmm. I guess. Mm-hmm. 'Cause like for me, I consume a lot of horror content. Like my friend just gave me their Shudder subscription and I was like, great, time to see more fucked up shit. And I don't know if it's like a like I'm desensitized or anything to it. But when I look at horror and when I take horror, the most successful horror stories, whether it be in video games or film, are the ones that tell like pretty honest and true stories. Like they come from real places. And the imagery kind of helps support the narrative and like the emotions and the intensity mm-hmm. of it. And the narrative of Devotion wasn't necessarily like an in-your-face horror, but more so the horror in their society and this very real plague of cultism and these different cults that dominate their culture. And cults are also a huge problem in the United States. I mean, there's a documentary on Heaven's Gate coming out, and that, for some people, like me, is scarier than any movie monster I could ever see because they're real monsters. So it's more of like a psychological horror in that regard, and I guess that's where that like disturbing comment also kind of comes into play because... Yes, that scene where you're ripping out your tongue and kind of like performing these trials to prove your devotion are like visually disturbing and kind of squirmy, but the underlying context of it, the fact that he's so devoted to this cause that he would self-mutilate in such a way is more like scary than anything in that moment.
Right. I think what worked for me with detention kind of ties into what you're saying. I thought it was much more like political, I'd say. And it's kind of ironic. There's a lot of themes of like censorship and things like that, which, you know, was years before all this stuff went down. Mm-hmm. And while, like I said, the gameplay is similar in the way that you're just kind of pushing the story along, I felt like that fit the medium much better than Devotion. Devotion visually was really well done. It definitely works a lot better than I would say Detention's almost like cartoony graphics, but it just the narrative going on with Detention worked a lot better for me. And with mm-hmm. Devotion, it felt almost, I get that. I understand what you're saying with the concept of like cults and being like the devotion, like there, obviously Devotion is the biggest theme, but it's more, you know, it's like all the things that he's devoted to and they're devoted to. It's not just like his devotion to his daughter. There's all these devotions. It's definitely an interesting kind of story that's being told, but it didn't feel complex enough to me to warrant not having anything more to it than just pushing the story along. It was just, you could kind of see where it was going, like almost like I would say like 20, 30 minutes in, I was like, okay, I see what's happening here. And you know, it was still presented in a very like interesting way, but it to me, I, you know, it didn't really, like by the end of it, I was like, okay, like, yeah, I figured it was going to be kind of like that. So generally for me with horror, like I tend to go with games towards I guess more lowbrow stuff, I guess. Like, I mean, I'm wearing a Clock Tower shirt right now, but but you know, like it's I guess that's what works for me.
All forms of horror are valid, and I think that's why horror is so compelling as a genre, because successful horror in particular, successful horror games are like, are so hard to achieve. It's like comedy, because horror, what scares you and what scares me are subjective. Yeah. And if there's something that can scare the both of us or impact us in the same way, that's what makes something elevated. That's what achieves greatness, right, in this genre. And yeah. Listen, I'm not out here saying that like Devotion was the best game of that I've ever played. I really didn't think that. I'm definitely with you guys in the whole walking sim is a little bit boring. There were a couple of times where I was sitting there and I was like, damn, I kind of wish I picked Outlast instead. because I felt like that would have fit what, you know, I wanted having, at the moment.
Having played Outlast, like, it's not like the gameplay in Outlast is there, but it's almost worse. Like, in like a sense of like, again, you know, like stealth sections in horror games to me is like very difficult to do correctly.
And I guess that's why like horror as a game genre is also really difficult to kind of,
it's funny,
like,
because
see what works.
You mentioning that is like, is that why horror is not, you know, as a genre is generally not like, it's not AAA titles. It's not like big. The only one who really can pump them out is Capcom, I guess. And that's more just because of the Resident Evil thing, but.
Yeah, and then I think of like horror, like game cult classics. I consider them like cult classics because, like, mm-hmm. you only hear very specific people talk about them. Like, Haunting Ground is on there, Rule of Rose. Like, these are some horror games that come to my mind, but like, they're more like psychological horror to me than, yeah. Like, jumping in your face. Yeah. I don't know. It's really hard to find a happy medium between the two.
Horror in general is funny, just like in what you're saying. It's like people find different stuff scary. Like, my wife hates horror movies, but like the movies that I tell her are really scary, she's like, that wasn't scary at all. And I'm like, like, I'm so confused. And for her, it's like gore and violence is like the is what makes horror for her. Whereas I'm all like psychological, like weirdness, like It Follows kind of stuff is like really scary to me. So when she watched It Follows, she's like, I don't get it. I was like, come on. Yeah. Like, please. It's so scary. And she's like, that was so boring. So it is interesting to think of like in the horror genre, you know, what is scary to some is not scary to others. And like as a video game, I think if you're in that genre, like scariness level does matter. Because, and again, like, not to, I'm digressing like crazy, but like for in Outlast, the stealth section, for example, it's no longer scary if you fail the stealth section, because you're like, okay, now I just have to trial and error through this, and this silly thing is just going to do the same thing every time. Mm. Whereas like Alien Isolation, I think is
great.
Like, that is a thing chasing you the whole time, and it's sort of trial and error, but because of the randomness of the events and like, it truly is scary. And that's using gameplay to impart that sense of scariness. Whereas Amnesia fails at that because, like, it's a silly stealth section where you just have to figure out what to do and the thing just repeats on a loop. So,
yeah.
Sorry.
I will admit that, like, gameplay-wise, it is a bit lacking, but it's so short. And I think that the themes that it touches on are worth having a conversation about. Yeah. Because there are also a lot of, like, heavy themes about mental health and the stigma that still persists around mental health. And unfortunately, it took a little girl's life, and it's things that actually happen. And, you know, I can appreciate the dialogue and the discourse that it's opened up, not only about the things that are mentioned in the game, but also the censorship of the game that mm-hmm. kind of elevated it to this, like, kind of I don't want to say household name, but like, you say, oh, there, you know, you say Devotion, and then you say, oh, the censorship game, and people know exactly what you're talking yeah. about.
And the fact that we even played it for a game club game, like, wouldn't have happened without that. So it yeah. is interesting, because that did that. It's kind of the Streisand effect, right? Like, it's like, because they censored it, it is now popular, or more popular than it would have been, at least. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I dug it. I thought it was cool. It was a little different. I love this. Like, the story, I think, was the strongest part of the game, and then the visuals, like Tim said, it's tough because it's just a tough genre to get perfect. And I think that kind
of
suffers.
It's one of those, like, your mileage may vary kind of things. Because, like, I will admit that for me, when I played it, I had several moments where, like, the atmosphere, me and Berto talked about this, like, it just made us uncomfortable. Like, where I just felt, like, chills on my shoulders. And that's successful horror to me because it's got me thinking about my own environment. And there was a moment in the game, no bullshit, I had to clip it because I was like, there's no way this is real. I played the game like August 24th, and in game, one of the apartments, the date was August 24th. And I such a fucking scary moment that I was like, no, it has to be one of those like Doki Doki Literature Club thing where it like learns your computer or something. Like, there's no way. But no, it was just a coincidence, but it helped like immerse me in this apartment that you grow intimately familiar with over the course of quote unquote 3 years.
It's 3 different years. It's funny because just like what I was talking about before, playing the game through in one setting, like the one good thing I will say about that is I did it at night, like all the lights off, like super scary and stuff. And there were parts where like the atmosphere was definitely like creeping on me. Like, you know, when you kind of just like,
looking over your shoulder, did I just see something move in the corner of my eye?
And the mannequins. The mannequins really tripped me out.
Definitely. It's the kind of thing where it's like, I'm interested to play the first game now because Tim was talking about it. Because Detention, you said it was, Tim? Just to see like their progression, because I do think there's talent here, and I do think it's definitely like a game worth trying and playing. So it'd be interesting to see, like, you know, as they continue what they're gonna do next, and to see their growth from Detention to Devotion, which
I think. I hate to keep talking about the horror genre, but it is about to be like October in like, I don't know, 15 days, 2 weeks. So whatever, it's never too early for spooky discussions. when you hear a lot of discussion about Devotion, they always say like PT-like or PT game or PT sim. And I feel like PT is a blessing and a curse on the genre because PT spurred all of these, like this huge wave of these kind of walking sim type games or these intimate claustrophobic games that are kind of based in a loop. And none of them can achieve the kind of success that PT had. And it just makes you wish that you were playing PT instead.
Yeah.
It's so shit. Sorry.
It's like calling for a couple of years there, everything was like the Dark Souls of 2D Metroidvanias and stuff.
That's still the case.
It's the same thing where it's like
it's if the Dark you compare Souls game to Dark of Souls, puzzle
it's gonna
games.
I'm gonna hate it because it's not Dark Souls. So please, like, don't.
It's like the Citizen Kane of Dark Souls of puzzle games.
Or the Undertale of dance games, rhythm games.
Exactly. It's funny because I remember reading about the game. It was all PT this, PT that.
Yeah, and PT like, okay. influence. And like maybe that it's like, kind of PT fucked just it up
a,
for me.
It's just a scary game, but there were other games like that previous. Like it's kind of silly. To,
got it. So it's Norman Reedus.
I just wish... PT was just lightning in a bottle, man. I don't know what it was about it. And I think it was also when YouTube gaming was kind of at this height, where more and more like Markiplier and PewDiePie were hitting like the tops and more people were talking about it on like Good Morning America and shit. I don't know. It just seemed to come at the perfect time and then they took it away. So now it just forever lives in this state of gamer mythical. Nostalgia.
It's like a unicorn.
for those lucky few who are you know,
like the Star Wars Amy Hennig game,
who had like the forethought to not update their PlayStations while PT was still on it, they're the lucky ones who still have it and are able to play it until Sony realizes, hey, maybe there's something to this and let's re-release. But I don't think that's gonna happen.
It's odd that they weren't like, we should capitalize on this considering that everybody wants it.
Well, there's there's a more fascinating story in there between Kojima and Konami. That is, that's yeah, for that another is podcast. Yeah.
You'd think they would figure out, like, hey, do you want to make $1 million? It's really like, easily,
no, but... we want to turn PT into a pachinko machine. It's going to be called Pachinko.
I'm going to make Strand games, guys. I'll see you later. But yeah, sorry. I think this was started with what you're playing. Well, the other thing I will say quick. Oh, sorry.
No, I was going to say, well, I'm glad to. It started off, it is the what you're playing segment, but I definitely wanted to get your guys' thoughts on it because when we were discussing the game at the game club, we really wanted to get your guys' take on it to see what you thought about the game, get your honest and unabashed.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. What was I going to say? Oh, just as a quick other thing, I got the this thing called the Mister. It's kind of like a RetroPie, Raspberry Pi, mm-hmm. but it does hardware emulation instead of software emulation. Is the explanation I got? But I got that set up, and I've been playing like a million different old school video games. I did get like Neo Geo stuff. I got a bunch of arcade games and MAME stuff, which I've never really tinkered around with before. So yeah, I built this like silly computer thing called a Mister, but if you're interested in games emulation, I would look it up because it's pretty fantastic. It plays games like flawlessly, as if they were running on the original system. So
awesome.
That's my other shout out. But a lot of X-Men Son of Adam, or what is it, Children of the Adam, what is it called, Berto?
The first fighting game,
the fighting game where it's just the very X-Men.
The first one.
For some reason, I was playing a lot of that.
The one where Magneto's the final boss. You got Silver Samurai, yeah. Omega Red.
I think it's Children.
Children of the Atom.
Okay. Yeah.
So many memories with that arcade cabinet. When I was in elementary school, there was a deli right across the street in the corner, and they would have rotating cabinets, and that was like always one of the ones that they used to have. And you would always like quarter up and be like, "Next game, next game, next game." I would trade
that,
in.
That game was like. I feel like it's the first it's Marvel vs. Capcom before they made Marvel vs. Capcom.
Yeah.
I don't know when it came out, but I think it was ahead of Marvel vs. Capcom.
Oh, it was ahead of Marvel vs. Capcom. I was playing that game when I was, I want to say, in like fifth or sixth grade, maybe. So that goes to show you how long ago the arcade cabinet exists.
I would check if you like any sort of homebrew or emulation stuff, I would check it out. The Mister, it's called. But it's pretty dope. I've been playing a lot of old school games. I was digging that. What else have you guys been playing that isn't Devotion?
I will jump right in on that side because I was like, I don't know who that's directed at, but I will take the ball and run with it.
I was just throwing it out there.
You take that out there.
Tim would go first.
I figured somebody.
Garrett's so quiet.
Garrett just threw up a Hail Mary, and everyone's like watching it. I'm like,
man, that grenade would have went off. By the way, just so
everyone is dead. I've also, like you, Garrett, have been on a sort of retro kick. I fired up the old RetroArch and started playing an old school JRPG that was a favorite of mine from back in the day. And it's sad that I'm calling this one old school, but in the reality, it is at this point. I'm playing Breath of Fire 3 for the PlayStation. Mm. And it makes me realize how talk heavy that game is and how slow to develop the story is. But I still love that game. It's, if you've played any of the Breath of Fire games, the gist of the story is you're part of the Dragon Clan. There's a giant calamity you have to defend the world against. You meet people that join your party, get to it, and you get dragon powers. Breath of Fire 3 is no different. I literally am just maybe like 2 or 3 hours into the game, so the main story really hasn't even developed. I just got into the point where you meet like the first of your party members as a child, and you start getting into like really the thick of it, and I'm like, oh, this game is just as good as I remember it being when I first played it. So I'm thinking about making that maybe like a weekly series because I just started it, and I'm like, you know what, this would be kind of fun to stream. So I'm thinking about making that a weekly. Outside of that, continuing on with the sort of retro theme, even though this is a game that was released last year, fired up Panzer Paladin again just because I was playing that with my son. The other day, kind of sat him on my lap and fired the game up, and he was just pressing the jump button repeatedly. And I kind of like had to guide him along by moving.
That's progress.
By moving Grit, which is the name I think of the giant mech, and he just like pressing the jump button. I'm like, all right, cool, we beat the boss. And I'm like, you just kind of hit the one button, and I did everything else. But I'm starting to get him into the gaming sphere. And when I did that, I'm like, you know what? I kind of want to play Panzer Paladin again myself. So I did. And I'm a sucker for like any old school looking pixel art game. If your indie game looks anything like that, chances are I will buy it and I will play. And also just some more Death's Door. There's no big news there. I've been playing that game for the past like 3 episodes.
Yeah.
The game which is great. Good,
because
I love
the next Game Club game.
Oh, all right. Let's mark it down. Death's Door.
That's the announcement.
Boom. Boom. Marked it down. That game is great. I love the game. It's so good.
We'll save it for the episode.
No, I will wax poetic about it on the episode. There are a few things here and there that I found that I'm like, you know what, this I could do without this, or this seems a little too on the nose. But like you said, since it's a Game Club game, I will save that for the discussion. But it's a fantastic game. Quickly becoming my contender for Game of the Year.
Oh, damn. Okay.
Yeah. It's that serious. Tim, the ball that was meant to be thrown in your direction that I so casually just intercepted, what have you been playing?
So I have also played a retro game, although kind of a slightly different category. I played a lot of the game Seventh Guest, which was... a point-and-click adventure puzzle game that came out around the same time as Myst. It kind of like followed up on that hype of like sort of FMV mixed with 3D graphics, like PC game that centered around puzzle solving. And it's interesting because I never played that game back in the day.
Myst is what you're saying you've never
played? No, I played Myst. I never played Seventh Guest. Which it was, I guess it was like its own camp. It had its own sequel. Myst had its own sequels, but Seventh Guest, it's similar and different. I know it's not really helpful. Myst is much more open ended, I'd say. It's kind of like all exploration based. You're just kind of like wandering around this island, and the puzzles are very like open ended, sort of, they're kind of like, you just have to like, you're trying to figure out like the vibe, I guess. It's very vibe based, whereas Seventh Guest is much more like traditional puzzles.
Okay.
Like here's like,
because I will say Myst has like weird, like the puzzles are not like straight up and obvious, I would say, especially as far as video game puzzles go.
Yes, you could be solving a puzzle you don't even realize is a puzzle in Myst, for example. Like, you're just, like, walking around and, like, seeing signs or, like, hearing sounds. And you're like, okay, I guess this is a puzzle. Like, but Seventh Guest, it's very obvious when you're solving a puzzle. It is fun revisiting this style of game. Like, there's one section of the game, it's literally just a maze with, like, a series of dead ends. And it was fun. I was playing with my friend, and we were like actually mapping out the maze like on paper and stuff, like as we were going by, because otherwise you're just like hitting dead end after dead end. Like, I don't think it'd be possible to do that off of memory. You like have to write it down. But there are points in the game that really show its age, and it was getting really frustrating towards the end. Just like some of the puzzles are like so tedious, and you know, you can know the solution and you're just like, it can take you like, you know, 20-30 minutes just to solve it, and it's a very slow game, like, but it does have a sort of like cheesy appeal to it. The acting is very I'll say melodramatic, but it's overacting, I guess is the best way to describe it. But it's an interesting very interesting game. Like I said, I never played it, and very unique and true to its time setting. Like you're just essentially trapped in this house, and it's like kind of horror-esque. It's like spooky. There's like ghosts and stuff, but it's so corny. It's like it's nice. It has a charm to it. So
yeah. Because I would say like Myst, those like pre-rendered kind of that era of 3D looking pre-rendered graphics is always just spooky to me in general. Like just something about the lighting and stuff is very like off-putting. It almost has like an uncanny valley thing. I think it's because of the lighting that does that, because it's always like really harsh and like alien looking shadows and stuff.
Yeah. And it's interesting because back then it was hard to imagine graphics that were better than this. Like, this was like cutting edge, like, oh my God, like, this is the best graphics they're ever going to be. And now you look back and it's like,
You're like, wow, we didn't really know anything back then.
Yeah.
but yeah, that was an experience. Definitely enjoyed playing games like that. Now I want to play some older games like that. I was having a discussion. I mentioned this to Garrett actually, that like, it's fun playing games where you like have to have a pen and paper to play, because that's a concept that doesn't happen in games anymore. Like, mm-hmm. games will always have that functionality built into them, which is like, it's great. You know, it's quality of life. It makes perfect sense why you would have all of that stuff in the game. But for some reason, there's some sort of tangibility of like having to like go outside the game and then reference your notes and then having it come into play later in the game, like, and solving something because of it. It just, I don't know, it does something in my brain that modern games just don't do. So definitely want to find some more games that make you do that. But that was most of it. I did finish Little Nightmares 2 finally.
Okay.
It was cool. It was pretty good. I would say Little Nightmares 2, Little Nightmares 1, take your pick. They're both about the same level of quality. I would say I prefer Limbo and Inside. They're both very similar vibes. Little Nightmares is, I guess, a little bit more towards horror, but I'd say Limbo and Inside are a little bit more cerebral.
Hmm.
If it makes sense. I'd say Little Nightmares, it aims for scares a little bit more, at the expense of some kind of atmosphere, a little bit of atmosphere. It's not that the atmosphere is bad or anything, it's just not as interesting as Limbo and Inside. But if you're a fan of one series, you'll probably like the other series. But that's it for me. Would leave you, Shan.
I honestly really haven't been playing much other than Valorant. A new map came out. It's pretty cool, pretty interesting. It'll be really fun to see that map in rotation, competitively speaking, because I think Breeze is a fucking terrible map. My least favorite.
Do they rotate maps in and out in Valorant, or is it they're fully available and new ones?
No, they're just fully available and then they add new ones. Like, so this is a new act. So there's like music by Zed now that's been remixed by Zed, because he also released like a skin bundle.
Okay.
Of which I got a couple of items from because it was just super cool. But yeah, I still play a lot of Valorant. I have not yet finished 12 minutes, and it just gets harder and harder to want to finish it, honestly, because I just get more and more frustrated that I paid for it instead of just getting it on Game Pass.
I haven't heard great things about 12 minutes. I was interested from the E3 trailer, but
I was too. And like, there are a lot of mixed reviews when it first came out. So I was like, I'll just get it because it'll be fun to talk about. And I, like I said in the last podcast, I think they blew a lot of their budget on the A-list talent when ultimately it was irrelevant. They didn't really add anything to the story other than like media attention. Because you could have replaced them with like Troy Baker and Jennifer Hale, like literal like voice actors, and it would have been the same, you know? So
I will say that was like a little red flag to me in the E3 trailer, is seeing it's kind of like when animated movies were coming out and suddenly it was just like these people were, you know, TV stars or movie stars, and it's like, yeah, but do they know how to voice act? Like, And not doubting the talents of, you know, Willem Dafoe and all those people, but it's sort of like, shouldn't voice actors be doing this? You know, like it's a video
it's
game.
It's just like, I don't have an issue with using talent like that if they have something to add. I think David Cage is a good example of that. Whether you love or hate him, he utilizes those actors like down to the way that they look, because for him, it helps him tell his narrative, right? Whereas I feel like in this game, it doesn't matter if it's voiced by Willem Dafoe or someone else. Willem Dafoe still did a good job. I'm not saying that they can't act. Obviously, they can. It's just they paid a lot of money, and for what? For something that doesn't make a difference, because it even fucking tells you, I'm sorry, this game makes me so mad. It even tells you when you load up the game featuring the mocap talents of James McAvoy, Daisy Ridley, and Willem Dafoe. Yes.
For that game?
And then you look at the models, bro, and they look like Action Jackson. Yeah.
It's like mocapping like The Sims or something.
Yes. And I was like, dude, if you had done the mocapping because you wanted to use their expressions and then just change the model.
Yeah, like Santa Monica.
I mean, Naughty Dog and fucking Sony Santa Monica. Like God of War, they did all that.
And it works.
it does work. But the thing is, these character models don't have fucking faces. So what was the point? And the body movements, because of how cheap the production looks, body movements look like fucking Legos, and it doesn't even look like human movement. So why the fuck did you even do it? Why are you advertising this in my face? If you're not going to use the actors' faces, you're not going to use their expressions, you're just essentially using their voices and then very poorly putting some stupid Sims character over their body movements.
It'd be like mocapping Bug Snacks or something. It's like, what are you, why do you
need mocap? Yeah, with the talents of Jennifer Lopez. And, yeah. Like, you know, like, it's just like, why?
Oh,
who is she going to be? The hamburger? Like, I don't know what to say. And it's not that the story that's being told is bad. It's not. I think it's moderately compelling, but I just can't get over the marketing gimmick of the game, and also how much I paid for it. I can't justify paying $24 for this loop sim that looks worse than like a free game like Genshin. It's just frustrating. Because Genshin is a free game, Valorant's a free game, and then I load up 12 minutes and I'm like, fuck, I paid money for this. Phasmophobia with its new updates look better than this shit. But my god, it's got Daisy Ridley, and for what? For a top-down view of a sim. it's so bizarre.
What's funny? It's like, to me, that's like, Death Stranding was like a little, and I haven't played the game, so I don't want to comment on that.
Don't
like
save yourself.
Death Stranding having like a trailer where it's like all these movie stars and stuff. I was like, that's kind of weird. like that's, and that game, maybe having Norman Reedus, full face act in the game was necessary, but like, I kind of don't think it was for a game like
that. It's not worth it. don't.
So it's,
don't do it.
It's always weird when you're like, when you're, the selling point of your thing is literally like actors from outside the medium of like what you do. It's sort of like, okay, are you trying to grab?
Imagine they were like a Mass Effect starring Ben Affleck. Yeah. Like, it would just be so bizarre. And that's like,
are you trying to get Daredevil
like
to play it? Like, what do you? It gets a little silly, but
again, I wouldn't be harping on this as much if it really genuinely made a difference in like either gameplay or quality or something. But literally it feels like the only talent that they took with the budget that they had was their voices, to which I say, just use voice actors, but maybe they don't want to use them because they've unionized. Oh, whoops. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. I don't know what it was. And you can see in the rest of the game, in the gameplay itself, like, dude, my Blue's Clues game from a kid from childhood played better than the point and click shit that you do in this, because it's a point and click adventure game, bro. Like, I can't.
Yeah. I know, Tim, I think you and I talked about it, and I remember you were interested in it, and then I said, I feel like it, there's a lot of mixed reviews or stuff. Did you pursue it any further than that, Tim, or?
No.
Okay.
I thought about it, but.
I mean, maybe you dodged a bullet. You dodged a bullet, because Shan.
Probably.
It yeah, doesn't seem most, like it's the best review.
Most certainly. The only thing I knew about the game prior to Shan mentioning it was Jack. Shout out to Jack, obviously. And in chat, I saw that he subscribed 5 months ago on Jack, and he also had a raid earlier in Twitch. Jack, you rock. I was lurking on one of his streams, and he was playing 12 minutes, and I think it was like towards the end of the game, and like the frustration on his face, like having played through this game, it could not have been more evident. And he was like, this game sucks. He's like, I gotta go.
This game sucks. on Twitch, he's Puckhead 1994. He's my buddy Jack. I will never forget watching him finish Mass Effect 3 and like the heartbreak in him at the ending was amazing to watch. So I imagine 12 minutes could have been
just the same. Like I didn't watch him throughout the whole playthrough. I was just there. I was lucky enough to catch just the end of it. And it was completely evident on his face. He was like, this game, like, I gotta go. This game, that was it. This game is terrible. Yeah. That, and then Shan talking about it. I will not even play this game on Game Pass. So I will stay away.
Oh, damn. Okay. I mean, I feel like I would try it out I like playing games that nobody.
It's free on Game Pass. What I'm saying is, don't make the mistake I did and buy it for $24 on Steam, because I will tell you right here and right now, it is not a $24 game, in my opinion. You know, and I see what Jack's saying in chat, like, it was a better movie than video game. Again, the story is the only thing that has motivated me to keep going, because there is a twist that kind of happens early on that kind of recontextualizes the characters in the game. And that was pretty interesting for me. I was like, oh, okay, I can kind of buy into this. But then I get frustrated because the gameplay is so frustrating that the point and click mechanics don't work the way that I want them to, because you have to mix items in your inventory. But it's not like a system like Resident Evil, you know, where it's intuitive and it makes sense. Like, no, you have to argue with the game and do it like three fucking times before it registers. Oh, wait, you actually want to mix these two things together? Yes. Yes, I do. Again, like, I would have much rather like maybe watched something. Maybe watching someone else play this game is a more interesting experience, because I had a lot of people on Twitch telling me like, oh, it could be this and whatever. And that also made it interesting. But from a gameplay perspective, from a gamer perspective, they blew their budget on the acting. That's all I got to say.
Fair enough. Like, good old 12 minutes. Maybe don't give it 12 minutes.
I mean, if you get it for free and you really want to see what all the hullabaloo is about, then maybe give it a shot. I've heard enough that it's not even worth my time for free.
It's funny because like hearing that a game is like not doing great review wise makes me want to play the game. Like, it makes me want to like also jump in on that so I can criticize it. Game Pass, if you're gonna, I guess, is the key there.
So. There you heard it first here, folks. If you like torturing yourself with free games, a lot of build up for very little payoff, 12 minutes is the game for you. Anyone else been playing anything interesting?
Mm-hmm.
All right, well,
there's something coming out that I'm really excited about that I can't remember, but if it comes to me, I'll mention it. But
oh well. That is a great segue, Garrett, and thank you for that. I don't know if you did that intentionally, but speaking of games that are coming out, let us switch over to the Cynical Spin. And the first thing that I want to talk about that I have here on the show notes is PlayStation had a showcase. This was, as of the time of this recording, this was a week ago, so by the time, if you're listening to this on podcast, the PlayStation showcase happened about a week and a half ago on September 9th. And they showed a whole bunch of stuff coming out on the PlayStation 5. And I've listed a few things out here. It's a 40-minute long showcase where they showed us, you know, full gameplay trailers of some games, teasers of others, and just giving us a whole bunch of knowledge of games that are completely new, games that you've been waiting for. So it was a good mix of old and new. And some of the stuff that they were talked about here, and I'm going to start off with what they ended the showcase with, a game that I'm really looking forward to and I'm super hyped for, is God of War Ragnarok. So they showed a teaser where it was just God of War Ragnarok, just the title screen. I forget when it was. I don't know if it was like E3. I think it was E3 last year, where they showed just God of War Ragnarok, and people were super hyped for that. So we knew the name of the next game, but we didn't get anything else beyond that. And now we see a full cinematic trailer with gameplay included. And I got to tell you, I would love the first game. I'm incredibly hyped for the second one. It looks amazing. I need to see where the story goes. There was a whole bunch of stuff, tons of trailer breakdowns from people who are like huge God of War fans. Loved it. No announcement of any kind regarding either a release date or even a release window. So when it's coming out is up to interpretation. I'm thinking probably 2023. That is my best guess.
Oh, damn, that long. Oh,
okay. I think so. Either that or like
2022, maybe.
Either that or late 2022. Which might even get pushed to 2023, considering that the current trend of games right now, and again, this is because of the pandemic, is games that have been slated. Yeah. So the games that have been slated for like late 2022 getting pushed back into early 2023. So if I'm Sony, I'm thinking this game's not coming out till 2023, at least the early part of 2023. Still looks really good. Absolutely hyped for that. I don't know if you guys have thoughts on Ragnarok before, or do we want to just run through the list before we talk?
Can you scroll through? Like, yeah. Are there any like screenshots that you can show?
I mean, here's the actual trailer I can click on.
There are several things that were pretty interesting in the trailer. One of which is something that was present in the last God of War, God of War 4, or God of War 2018, however you want to call it, which is like the skills that you can also assign to Atreus. So like in God of War 4, there are like these attacks that you can use with like these Patronus birds or like wolves that were hella dope. And in this trailer, there's like some deer that he's running on. It's like so sick, so fun. Put that thing full screen.
Get this bad boy full.
I was wondering if the lady on the right one. I was like, is she a part of like?
She is absolutely a part of it.
Atreus is definitely older. You can tell by the voice actor's voice. I mean, he's not an 8-year-old kid anymore. So that'll prove to be an interesting dynamic between Kratos and his son. I personally am a fan of God of War 2018. I know that there are some people who played the OG series and kind of just didn't really like the change in tone, which like is understandable, but personally for me and the type of video games that I enjoy, this is like the perfect game for me to get invested in this kind, in this character and this lore and this studio. Because for me as a woman, and I'm, trust me, there are plenty of women who like OG God of War. This is just my opinion. It was so misogynistic from the outside looking in. And it was a huge joke when it came out. I mean, there's tits everywhere. It was like the Game of Thrones of video games. And like, it was a little bit prickly at first for me personally to get involved in the series. Now that this series has matured in a different way with its creator, Corey Balrog, I believe his name is, or Barog. He's a father now, and it reflected in the writing of God of War 2018. And I personally enjoyed that narrative because I'm a sucker for like things like Finding Nemo, man. Like, this is basically just God of War Finding Nemo. And I'm really excited to see what Ragnarok has to have. The gameplay was also really fucking fun.
Yeah.
I thought it was really cool. The customization. There are definitely some things in God of War 2018 that I remember not being a big fan of. I'd have to go back and revisit it. Because the way I left it, this is going to sound so crazy, but I never rolled credits on the game. Because you finish the main story, but the game gives you an opportunity to continue to explore the world and finish your quests before you go back to your house and then roll final credits. Well, I was stuck doing the Valkyries for like 10 years.
There is a surprisingly long, an arduous endgame to God of War.
Yeah.
That
if you're a completionist, but damn, that it was one of the few games in recent memory, aside from like The Witcher, where I was like, I'm going to 100% like plat this game. And it was realistic.
Like, it is hard to platinum because there's like, you got to find all, at one point, it's just like crows that are flying around.
No,
like
I
one
did.
Of the trophies.
I did damn, do respect. It because it was worth it. I mean, the hardest part for me was fighting all of the Valkyries. For those of you who remember that, but it was honest to God, one of my favorite side quests because it truly, for me, exhibited the perfect test of like the gameplay, right? Like, have you mastered the gameplay? Do you feel like you can achieve this? Can you beat this? What do you have in your arsenal to take this obstacle down? There's also like all of the different things you need to know to get certain armors. Like there's a Valkyrie that you have to fight in the poison world. So if you don't have a certain type of armor that is resistant to the poison, it's possible you can beat it, but you're going to cry tears like I did because it's going to take you a while. So you can run your way through that game like a bull in a china shop, but you can also play it really smart. And I hope that they keep that in Ragnarok. Yeah. I'm sure that they will.
I hope so too, especially because I think one of the things they announced, or it came out shortly after the showcase, was that Cory Barlog is not going to be... he is not going to be directing this one. So it's a completely new director. So he stepped back from the helm of the game. But I think when, you know, they showed the reaction from Sony Santa Monica, the people like the team behind the God of War games, and showing them like, oh great, the trailer's finally out there that we've been working on for so long. I think Corey was like, I know everyone might be afraid that I'm not directing this one, but you know, we have the utmost faith in, and I forget the name of the new director, but he's like, he's going to do a great job. So I expect,
I don't know,
the same level of quality.
Yeah, maybe it's a good thing, because honest to God, I wish that The Last of Us 2 wasn't touched by Neil Druckmann. I wish he had just fucking let go. Because, you know, sometimes that can be a detriment to your game.
I just want to shout out Jack. Thank you for gifting five subs. That's awesome, dude.
September.
We love Jack out. Here. Go check out Puckhead 1994 on Twitch. He's awesome. I've followed him since I think the beginning. So go check him out. He has an awesome stream. But thank you, Jack. But as a quick thing to add on to this God of War thing, and I it's funny because I think I'm just realizing it now with you talking about the end game, Shannon. God of War, the new one or whatever it's called, 20 whatever the date is. It kind of blew me away. I was shocked at how much I liked it. And I think a large part of that is it feels like an old school single player game where they actually built a proper end game to allow you to continue playing after just like the main story.
Yes,
or the main
mission. I don't know. It's and so addicting.
It's funny because Shannon, you, I'm basically just like adding on to what you were saying, but like the end game test of your skill in the game is such a genius design for a single player game. And instead of having this sort of endless grind or, you know, just like hunting achievements. And I will say that game, like, I feel like I got most of the achievements like without having to try, like
just like during the normal course of like,
it wasn't like stupid, like grind $1 billion at the casino or something like that.
A lot of it was
like
organic.
It was organic, and if you truly liked the game and were willing to play through it, like it was, you got the achievements, which is great. I think that's something severely lacking in a lot of single player games nowadays, in that they literally, like, and understandably so, but they don't really care what happens once you finish the story or once you finish the game. They give you some, like, oh, hey, you can go find, you know, 40,000 orbs and go play 20 soccer matches and you get achievements for it. But God of War actually built a very strong single player endgame. And the game, it surprised me, because I was very worried about it turning into something more like Uncharted or The Last of Us. And not that they're bad, but that they're more story based, like movie ish games to me. Whereas God of War had that cinematic experience, but the gameplay was insanely tight. It was very, very well done.
Yes. I was about to say, the main difference is that, like, Uncharted is definitely like a video game Indiana Jones experience, and Last of Us is a video game Walking Dead experience, just with more involved gameplay, you know. But God of War, in my opinion, it worked for me more than like the OG series, because I am really into story heavy games. In case y'all couldn't tell, shocker. And it managed to tell this incredibly compelling narrative with like these organic one-shot cutscenes that flow right into action. Like, yeah, it is just one continuous take the whole game. So you're just constantly in it, and the gameplay supports the narrative in such a way that, like, yes, it is an interactive experience with like this good story, but it's also a video game, and it still feels like a video game, and a good one at that.
Yeah,
it's one of the best, like, take the polish of a you know, PlayStation first party studio, yeah, and utilize it to its fullest while also making an incredible video game. And I think, like, that game, again, like, I usually like AAA games, I can always find faults, and there's very few faults with the new God of War, I think. Yeah. So it's exciting to see a sequel, certainly. And it's the kind of thing where also I think the lore in the first game was done very well, where it's like, it's a slight twist on kind of, you know, the Viking, you know, whatever Norse, you want to call that, mythology or lore, yeah, or whatever. Which was designed by like a white dude in 1860 or something like that. But it was a refreshing take on it, because it twists it and melds it into this really interesting atmospheric video game without going like stupid and avoiding the lore altogether. So I thought it was like a really interesting like retelling of that lore, but it left it open-ended. So the second game, you definitely can venture into that world a lot more. So I'm into it.
One of the last things I want to say on God of War before we run through the list of the other items that they showed at the showcase was, we get an accurate representation of what Thor should really look like. One of the things that they showed was some key art for some of the characters, some full model character art. And you think about it, Norse mythology, Thor loves to fight, loves to drink. Guy's drinking meat all the time. Meat is very heavy in sugar. It's made from honey. There's no way that this dude looks like Chris Hemsworth if he drinks as much meat as he does. We got a real look at what Thor looks like. And I am going to cosplay as Thor next time I go to any kind of convention when things open up. I got a dad bod Thor, and I'm all about it. That Thor is my Thor. Hashtag not Chris Hemsworth.
Why the hate for Chris Hemsworth?
Well, he just had, it's an unrealistic it's an unrealistic achievement for the normal man to try and be like, I want to cosplay as Thor, but I don't have 20-inch arms.
Berto, I've seen you coming from the gym. You look pretty good. Don't pretend but, like you didn't hit well, Thor.
This is a genuine question though. Like, didn't you fight Thor and someone else in God of War 2018?
You fight Thor's two kids, yes. Magni and Modi.
Oh, his two kids.
Yeah, you fight his son.
Doesn't Thor show up?
At the very end, which there's like a, you know,
like,
when you,
we've seen him before, haven't we?
It's like a hidden cinematic where you're doing something. If you go back to the house and you like go to sleep,
yeah,
they have a dream where like there's a giant storm that goes on and the roof of like the house tears open, and they actually showed this in the cinematic where all you see is like a hand reaching down for Mjolnir at like this guy's side.
It was like a tease. Okay.
Yeah, it was a tease at Thor, because
one of his sons uses like a a lightning hammer too,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, uses like a, okay. like a lightning mace, and the other one uses like a giant like broadsword. Yeah.
Got it. Thing.
Okay, sorry. I was just like, I remember Thor being mentioned.
Yeah.
I forgot it was his son. So
yeah. And I think Mimir is like, yo, Thor is a right nasty bastard. He is like, he's not nice. He is vengeful.
He gets mentioned. There's a statue of him too.
Yeah,
I think that
okay.
He's sort of in the game, but it's not. You didn't see him.
God, I just want to replay that game now.
Thick boy
I'm
Thor.
Just thinking of like that whole section in the mountain and the mines. Like, oh, so good. The puzzling in there.
Thor fell into that was one of the, between games.
The introduction of the enemy in the mines that, what is it? It's I think if you throw the axe at the enemy, it blows up. Or if you get too close, there was a mechanic that I should have figured out and I just couldn't. And I was like, this game sucks. Like the design is bad. It was on Twitch of me like ripping into the game. And then I figured out like, oh, if you throw the thing at him, he blows up and kills you. So just don't throw stuff at like I couldn't not throw things at him for like an hour, which occasionally happens to me where I'm just like, I just don't think for like an hour straight. But yeah, exciting to see a sequel. This is weird. Is it going to release on PS4 or is it just PS5?
I think it's PS4 and PS5.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I think it's releasing like, on both. But there might be something in a later news item that might make it irrelevant.
Oh yeah, there is later news items.
Might
I forgot.
Make it irrelevant. Stick around
can
for the rest of the
news.
Segue
to the next one.
You can say
Spider-Man
next...
2, Berto.
Yes.
Do you need more Spider-Man game? Do you need more at this point?
They are churning
these things out.
I need like... all the Spider-Man. I didn't play the Miles Morales DLC, but I heard that was pretty much just like Spider-Man 1.5. I'm like, which is great. I love the first Spider-Man. This looks great. You get two times the Spider-Man, so you get both Miles and Peter teaming up. And then there's a Venom teaser. The first game was amazing.
It looks so good.
If Insomniac like does, you know, if they just meet that bar again and they don't even try to exceed it, it's already going to be a great game because we're going to get a Venom. Venom is one of my favorite characters.
I don't know.
The narrative is just really compelling for me. Yeah. I think this version of Peter Parker is one of the best versions of Peter Parker I've seen in like prevalent media more than like the Marvel movies, because I'm so sick of the high school Peter Parker that we've seen in Tobey Maguire, in Andrew Garfield, in Tom Holland.
The Tobey Maguire really... one was funny. Because everyone really was like refreshing. 35 in high school. Everyone was
well,
so
I love the Sam Raimi Spider-Man, so please don't fucking come for me because I will for your neck.
That's amazing.
But,
it's funny
it's really cool to see. I love this Peter Parker because he's more mature. Mm-hmm. He's got years in as Spider-Man, and he's also an adult. So when I saw Miles Morales in it, I just immediately thought like Into the Spider-Verse, and I love this. I love the mentor-mentee relationships and narratives. I love them so much. And I love this incarnation of Peter because he is such a good guy. He's so easy to want to root for. He is your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. And I think Insomniac and Yuri Lowenthal, the voice of Peter Parker, did such a great job bringing
Fantastic.
This character to life and really giving him a video game like that is on par with like the Arkham Asylum games for me.
Yeah.
Like the Arkham games, because they're such tight portrayals of Batman that I feel that these are such good, at least the first one was such a good portrayal of Spider-Man in this mythos. And the DLC introducing Black Cat and also, you know, like other mobsters, like it's just done a really good job building that environment. And it's so cool to see Venom up in there too.
I'm excited.
It's interesting because the gaming rights to Venom, is that a similar conflict where Sony owns?
I don't know how like the gaming rights play out.
I wonder about that.
Yeah,
because you don't. It's strange to me that you make anything with Spider-Man and not have Venom in it. Like to me, Venom is like the Joker to Batman for Spider-Man. So I'm shocked at how not much stuff Venom is in. And I always wonder if that's because of that weird, because Sony's like, check out our Venom movie or whatever. I know Carnage, I think is in Fortnite. I saw something like that where it's like it's like, what kind of a weird advertisement is that?
I honestly just feel it's because writers are unsure of how to handle Venom because he is also considered an anti-hero.
Yeah, he's got his own like weird quirks.
So even though he is like initially a villain to Spider-Man, he is an anti-hero in his own way.
He's the lethal protector.
It's hard to introduce him at first, I think. And then the fucking Venom movie was a disaster.
Yeah. Like, it was successful enough that they made us, they're making a second one.
I think that movie is a perfect, like, it
turn
is
turn your brain off.
The movie's not good, but people are gonna see it. You know what I mean? Like, so yeah, of course they're making a second one.
Insomniac showing off their Marvel chops.
I don't want to start an argument. I feel like the first Spider-Man game I played a good amount of, probably like 30 hours, and I couldn't finish it because I found the story missions very boring. That's just me. That's open world games. I'm sorry. But like, I can't, like, how many of these Spider-Man games are they going to churn out?
All the Spider-Man games, as long as there's no more Mary Jane segments, those segments.
I will say the Spider-Man games of just traveling around the city and doing, like, it's so weird because in that game, I think I did all of the stupid achievements, like collecting 100 backpacks and stuff, and then just didn't finish the story, like, which is very odd, but that. The swinging around the city and doing all the fun stuff to me is like genius. I think it's perfect. For me, the story, every time I do that in games though, where I'll do all the side stuff and then like the story bores me because it's like, okay, this mission is like you do a stealth section and then you walk through the museum and like, you know, and I was like, okay, I just want to swing around at a million miles an hour.
Well, see, here's the problem. You're walking around a museum as Spider-Man. You shouldn't be doing that.
Well, in the first game, that was part of the gameplay. Like, that was a thing. Like, there was weird sections where you, like, walk around a museum as Mary Jane and stuff, and it's like...
Oh, well, okay, yeah, like, I totally admit that. The Mary Jane segment sucked.
Like, can't you give Mary Jane something? Like, she just walks around, like, in a museum? Like, come on. It reminds me of Peach in the Paper Mario stories, where it's like, you play Mario for, like, 40 hours, and then they switch to Peach, and she, like, bakes a cake and you're like, oh, Nintendo, please, like, let Peach do some stuff. Which I think in later games they did actually give her like a fleshed out role, which was cool. But
yeah, it's certainly not a game without faults. I mean, I think what made Spider-Man so successful was the open world aspect of it, where like these missions really help ground you in the universe that they're selling to you. I mean, I took so many selfies as Spider-Man, just like throwing up peace signs all throughout Manhattan.
Yep.
Because it was just fun. Sometimes I would like to see the images of him on the train taking the subway because you fast travel. And that's such a cute little detail to me that if he's like, nah, man, I don't want to swing around, he's going to take the subway. It's cute. And then you'll see tweets on your phone because there's a social media system in the game. It's all about the world building. I do agree that like the main story, it wasn't like spectacular, but it wasn't the worst egregious one that I've seen. I mean, shit, there was that Spider-Man like multiverse game that released like, oh my gosh, like,
called Shattered Dimensions, the one with Spider-Man.
You know what's funny is
it was so forgettable. At least I can remember what happened in this most recent Spider-Man.
Yeah, it's funny because me complaining about them churning out Spider-Man games, they've been doing that for years and years now. Now that I think about it, because there was like Spider-Man 2, that weird multiverse one, the one where he had the weird future suit. There was like a lot of Spider-Man games.
Not all of these are. Insomniac's only done Miles Morales.
The recent ones. But yeah, now that I think about it, there's actually a tremendous amount of Spider-Man games since the Toby. I think Spider-Man 2 was the first. There was a PS1 for the first one. PS1 game, I think.
And I guess that's why I find this version of Peter Parker so endearing. He's different than like what Marvel's been pushing out in their film lineup. I think he's more of the Peter Parker in line with the Peter Parker that like I grew up reading with. Kind of, I don't know. He reminds me a lot of like Spider-Man 2 Peter Parker.
Mm.
You know, when he's kind of struggling to live his life in New York and figure out what he wants.
Yeah.
But that's such a relatable issue for 20-something year olds. Like you finish college and you're like, what the fuck do I do?
That's
now?
The one where he like loses his powers and then he's where like there's like a police chase happening and he like eats the hot dog and is having like a great day because he doesn't have to after
that. That's where he's like, I am Spider-Man no more.
There was always something very endearing. You're right about the character, and then it was like it's just a dude living his life. Like it's just a guy like trying to figure stuff out.
Spider-Man is the most successful when he's your neighborhood Spider-Man. And what's so endearing about Spider-Man as a superhero, and I guess what draws a lot of people to that fantasy, is that he is just a normal guy who was put in extraordinary circumstances. He is like the Marvel poster boy, because DC, everyone's born metahuman or with money or with some sort of access. Whereas Peter Parker was just a boy who just happened to get bit by a spider. He could be you. Yeah. He could be me. And I think that's what makes Peter so relatable, because he's awkward. He's trying to figure out how to be a human being, but also carry the weight of this great responsibility.
Yeah. He
knocks out Doc Ock in one.
How to deliver pizza. How do you fit your time?
He knocks out Doc Ock in one panel, and then the next panel's trying to figure out how to make rent next month.
Why the fuck is Spider-Man worried about rent?
Yeah.
I'm hyped to see what Insomniac does with this next game. I love the first one.
Yeah.
Give me more Spider-Man. And jumping from one Insomniac Marvel title to another very surprising Marvel title that no one could have called this happening. I don't know how I feel about this one, but if there is one developer that I can that I know could make this work, it is Insomniac. There's a Wolverine game that they're developing, and they teased with a very, very short teaser trailer where you see this burly looking dude at a bar, and you just see like him from the behind, and then this, you know, thug walks in, you see a switchblade flip open, and then they cut to like this view of the guy at the bar. All you see are his bloody knuckles, and then you hear the schnicked sound and the claws come out, and then it says Wolverine. So we're getting a Wolverine game, and Insomniac has somehow become like the Marvel studio. So this could work. I could also see how this could not work, because Wolverine-centric games have never been really good.
Wasn't there... I feel
Do
like
we have
the
an image of the logo?
There is... It's a short trailer.
Wasn't there a game... Sorry, for...
Get back.
I think it had to do with the Wolverine.
The place where I
was it the Origins?
It was. There was an X-Men Origins Wolverine game that was actually
that
kind
like
of good.
Surprisingly good. I thought that was like.
It was better than anyone expected it to be. Everyone kind of wrote it
Which
off.
Which isn't exactly saying much considering the movie was based on and stuff. It's funny. Jack is like just Days Gone motorcycle driving all over.
With
actually,
a dude
funny
at
enough,
claws.
Days Gone would kind of work as that scenario. You know what? I immediately thought of the game Prototype, which came out. I want to say that was PS3. There was Prototype and Prototype 2. Very similar to Spider-Man games in that it's like this free roaming. You could run up buildings and stuff. I actually wonder if Radical Studios might have had something to do with the early Spider-Man games now that I think about it. But that I'm kind of wondering if the game's going to lean in that direction of like doing a kind of open world, like you're this berserker who can just like cut through, you know, 100 dudes and take down helicopters and stuff with your bare or kind of spiky fists or whatever. Or if they're going to go something a little more akin to like a traditional like hack and slash story game or something like that. But I could see it working. Like it makes sense to me, especially like seeing what they did with Spider-Man and how they handled it, which has been wildly successful. Like it kind of makes sense to branch out into what I think is a like Wolverine is obviously like the choice in like for an X-Man. You know what I mean? Like he's the one that everyone picks for all the movies and stuff. So like it kind of makes sense to me that they would head in this direction a little bit.
I think the most notable thing for me is I was going to mention it earlier with Spider-Man. I'm pretty sure they confirmed that this is Old Man Logan.
Oh, did they? That's awesome.
of Wolverine. And what that tells me as a consumer is that Insomniac, between the level of writing that they had on Spider-Man and Miles Morales, is that they have people on their writing team who are familiar with the source material. So much so that they're willing to go with starting their game with Old Man Logan Wolverine. And I think that's super ballsy. I'm like, hell yeah, these writers feel confident. Because the last good Wolverine thing I can think of was Logan.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, which that borrowed a lot from Old Man Logan. Definitely. In terms of temperament and kind of like where he is in his life. So we'll see. We still don't have gameplay. We have no idea other than this.
Yeah, so. Just that one trailer and nothing else.
Which is so funny because that little trailer is like, it reminds me of like, you know how like Batman's parents you see die in like every medium a billion million times? Yeah. Like that trailer is like Logan in every
just like video game. Just a bar of
like sitting in a Canadian bar and then like some guy picks on him, you know what I mean? Like,
well, what I didn't see it when I first saw the trailer was like the amount of dead and mangled, well, not mangled, but dead and potentially knocked out bodies around the entire bar, which means that Logan did some work before he sat down and had a drink. So excited to see that. I'll just run through these last few ones real quick before we talk about KOTOR, because we're going to have more to say about KOTOR, I expect, than we do from these. But some other titles that were announced, reserving, you know, our discussion on KOTOR. GTA 5, which we talked about previously. You know, they said it was coming out on the PS5. Surprise, surprise. It was supposed to come out later this year, but they announced it's getting pushed into March of 2022. Gran Turismo 7 is also getting a March 2022 release date. I think they announced Gran Turismo 7 previously, but they didn't give a release date. Now we have a release date. The Uncharted Collection is getting a remaster for the PS5, and that's coming in early 2022. And they also showed a new look at Project Eve, which is this upcoming hack and slash game for the PS5.
Is it the full collection? I don't think so, because when they announced the trailer, it only said A Thief's End and the one with Chloe and Drake's fucking Fortune.
Thief's End and Lost Legacy. Okay.
Oh. Lost Legacy. Yeah. There you go. Thief's End. Okay, I was fucking right. So I'm sorry. And I only want to clarify this because I got excited. A whole PC remaster of the entire series would have made me so happy. But then I was like, no. Let's not fucking get everybody's hopes up. It's literally only for the one that people like the least.
Yeah.
And then the one that's better than the one that people like the least. So. Mm.
That's some of the other stuff coming out, and then we'll close out this discussion on the PlayStation event with an event that's 20 years in the making. We're getting a remake of KOTOR coming on PS5 and also for PC, which if you've ever played KOTOR when it was originally released, you'll know how awesome the game is. So I am really excited to see what this game looks like completely rebuilt from the ground up for next gen and for PC. To take advantage of all that sweet, sweet graphics updates.
Can I ask you guys, so I've never played KOTOR. I've watched Jack play a lot of it, actually. When you see this news in a remake, because I think I'm pretty sure, Shan, you're a big fan of KOTOR, and then Jack is also a big fan of KOTOR. When you see this as like a remake, can I ask, do you want them to, like, aside from obviously visuals and so on and so forth, do you want them to change anything gameplay wise or anything like that? Or are you just looking for like, here's a good excuse to replay the game? You know what I mean?
I have a complicated relationship with KOTOR. My partner, well, and it's not complicated in like a scandalous way. It's just, it's an older game. So there's definitely some aspects of it that I think should be changed. Especially in terms of like difficulty. Sorry, I'm a huge person about difficulty because like if I stop a game because it's so hard, like, man, I can tell you that there have been plenty of people who fucking stopped, you know?
Yeah.
And there were a couple of moments where I had to run and get my partner in the other room and be like, can you please beat this for me? Because I'm literally about to pound my head into the fucking desk. because it's taken me 20 times. And the game is unforgiving. It is not, it is a very punishing game, but it's super fun. It's a remake from the ground up, which also means that they're rewriting story things as well.
Oh, they are?
And
okay.
I think that's where my reservations come in. Sure. Because Disney Star Wars, like, you know, post erasure of the EU, this new age of Star Wars is like, they don't explore as much of the universe as they could. They kind of like streamline things, and I'm afraid that they're going to streamline a lot of the really interesting exploration between races and even just Jedi politics, because like Jedi are not always good people, and I think that's something that this game also brings to light. Like, yes, the Sith are bad, but the Jedi also act in a lot of greedy self-interest. You know, and KOTOR really is one of those games that it's really how you play. Like, I was telling my partner how I was doing it. I tried to model my Jedi, Jaina Solo, which I thought was hilarious because the game takes place like 1,200 years before the Skywalkers even exist. So there's...
Oh, no. Did we lose Shan?
I think we might have lost Shan for a second.
Like mid-KOTOR nerd out.
Yeah,
oh, no.
she was in the middle of freaking out over KOTOR, and we think we might have lost Shan.
Well, okay. So, Berto,
yes.
Try to pick up where Shan left off, because we might as well. So it sounds like the Shan was just a little worried about changing the story.
Yeah, yeah. I think If her concern is sort of this erasure of the extended universe, which Disney did when they acquired the property, and they said everything that's extended universe is no longer canon, they're going to try and make it seem like the Jedi were always this good organization, always fighting for the good of the universe, when in reality, it wasn't always the case. They were, you know, they did some shit too. So be true to that. Show that the Jedi... also, you know, had their flaws. If they try and make it seem like it's as clear as black and white, Sith bad, Jedi good, then that'll...
Can I say a hot take on Star Wars that might... I know people are very sensitive over Star Wars.
Oh, here we go. Listeners, if you're fans of Star
I'm
Wars,
terrified.
Send your hate mail to Garrett at IHateStarWars.com.
I didn't say that. Can I say that I think one of Star Wars' biggest issue is its need to constantly reference the stuff they've already told, in the fact of like, hey, remember Darth Vader? Hey, remember Han Solo? Hey, remember the Chewbacca? And it's like,
remember the Chewbacca?
I think KOTOR's strength, and I haven't even played the game, but watching Jack play it, was that it told like an original story that didn't have to be like, hey, remember those first movies? Like, they're back. Like, we have everything from them. And I kind of think that's Star Wars' biggest weakness, is that they're so afraid to move on from the original trilogy. And understandably so, because obviously the prequels, like, tried to do something a little different, and it seemed like a lot of people hated it.
Yeah, and in your defense, it's not really a hot take. I think everyone with episodes 7, 8, 9, they're like, this is just kind of a retelling of the original trilogy with maybe some flashy updated graphics, but it's nothing really original. So that's not really so much of a hot take. I thought you were going to really completely shit on Star Wars, in which case we're going to get a bunch of hate mail levied our way. Which wouldn't be a bad thing. It would be some kind of mail our way.
But I think like the stuff that I've seen of KOTOR, and what's cool about KOTOR is it is an original story,
yeah,
and it doesn't feel the need to be like, I remember the guys from the movie. And I kind of think Star Wars needs that. I think Rogue One is a good instance where, like, Rogue One is my favorite Star Wars movie out of all of them. And I think I don't think it's like a perfect movie or anything like that. But I think what it did was it told its own story with its own unique characters. And yeah, did it bridge the gap and kind of basically tie directly into the first trilogy? Yes, but it did it in a unique and interesting way without feeling the need to be like, hey, remember like all the stuff that Star Wars fans like? Like we have a Yoda, you know, like that kind of stuff. And like even in the prequels, like which I watched the first movie very recently, actually. It's like, okay, do we really need R2-D2 and C-3PO? Like, do we need this again? Do we need more of them? So I kind of think KOTOR is like cool because it's like, it takes the EU and it tells its own story. And that's me also ignoring the fact that I haven't played through the game. So there might be a lot of references to the original trilogy. But from what I've seen, it's like, it tries to be its own thing. And I think that's a good thing in Star Wars.
Am I back?
Yes.
Yes. Man, okay. Sorry, Shane.
No, you're
we filled
fine.
The gap where I brought the mood back down. I was like, hell
yeah, we were super high on Star Wars, and then Garrett's like, let me shit on Star Wars for a second.
No, it didn't sound like that. I guess the thing with KOTOR, like Puck had to say, and thank you. Yes, I am back. This is going to be such a pain in the ass to edit. I'm sorry. But like he said, the important thing here is that they don't mess with the core story too much. There, a lot of people have a lot of... Star Wars is such a hard fandom to appease because people take Star Wars very personally, in my experience. And that's not me judging the fandom. I mean, my partner is really huge into Star Wars, so that's why I feel like I come from this place of like when I consume Star Wars content, it's also shaded through this light of someone who's heavily invested a lot of his time reading the books, getting involved in the universe, and then Disney wiping it out. So for him, he holds a lot of like attachment to games like KOTOR or Republic Commandos, you know, these older Star Wars titles that's told interesting and new stories from different perspectives. Again, that weren't like Skywalker related or even like kind of in that same vein. What's cool about KOTOR, and like this is just a really quick snapshot, but I think it's really telling of the type of story that BioWare told, which is another thing. KOTOR for me plays like proto Mass Effect. It is so obvious to see where Mass Effect got its bones from, because the dialogue structure, the different branching options, how it can affect future quest lines, they're still prevalent. But what BioWare does successfully, and I hope Asper Media or Asper Games does as well, is like it's got to do with world building. Like, for example, the Twi'leks are incredibly discriminated against on the first world of Taris, and you find out that...
Tell me out. Twi'leks is the blue lady with the long kind of...
Yeah, with the head tails.
Hair tentacles, I guess. Or yeah.
The sure. Head tails, yeah. So okay, they have two head tails.
Got it, yes.
And like the women, you find out like there's a lot of sexism towards them because Twi'leks are a little bit more attractive. And it's very similar to how the Asari are treated in Mass Effect, the commodization of like the female body, and how you meet Twi'leks on this planet who are like, I want to own a business, I want to do this and this with my life, but I can't because I'm oppressed. And I think those are the stories that Star Wars are good at telling, because like Star Wars is ultimately like an underdog story. It's about the good guys rising up against this like insurmountable evil, or seemingly insurmountable evil, and contextualizing that with, you know, the different struggles of different races, because like you'll see some Twi'leks enjoy the privilege that they live in. Some of them want to rage against the machine, like Puckhead said. But I think that's what makes KOTOR special, is that you can really explore this environment and take this Mass Effect approach, but to a Star Wars universe. And it's really good, narratively speaking, and I think that's where my hesitation comes into play with this bottom up. Like, if it was just we're putting new paint on it and a new gameplay system.
We're polishing.
Yeah. Because the gameplay, I'm not gonna lie, it is not fun. but it plays like a tabletop, right? So the game generates
dice. It's kind of like it's like turn-based, but real time, right?
Yes. Real time turn based. Like it's like Dungeons and Dragons, but you're constantly rolling dice for every battle you take, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I got
so you. The way that you the armor and like some these systems are really complex sometimes. Like the way that your armor interacts. If you level, don't auto level up because it'll fuck up your whole character and everything. I had to learn that the hard way. So the thing is that this is such an old game and there's like lots of quirks to it that like I had to play it looking at game FAQs and Reddits and subreddits to kind of make sure that I was, you know, making sure that I wasn't playing myself into a corner. Mm-hmm. So I hope that they fix those kinds of things because the whole dice roll system, it gets really, really frustrating with more difficult opponents. Like you can get away with it in the early game, but as the game starts to get more and more difficult because of the you fight other Jedi, you know, and those battles are more intense, but it's this constant dice roll. I kind of wish it was just like a Mass Effect or like a action adventure game where you could just implement like that kind of combat system.
Yeah. And I wonder if they would, because a game
I
like
would
that,
hope so.
Like could use a little. I think that system's a bit dated and it could the thing that worries me about something like that is always like, okay, but don't turn it into something it's not. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I remember when they did Dragon Age to Dragon Age 2, and it's like you took like this turn-based like strategy RPG and made it into like a 3D action RPG, and it was like, oh, but like that like why did the first thing was amazing. Like why would you change it?
I mean, I wouldn't be angry if they wanted to keep the dice roll system but update it. What I'm saying, okay, it just needs to change.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think it's way too dated and a little bit too complicated. And I think it could really deter people from playing the game. At least modern gaming audiences. Not to say that modern gamers don't want difficult experiences. They don't want frustrating experiences. And if I'm being honest, there were a couple of missions that were frustrating to the point where I was like, I'm going to quit this game. And my partner was like, no, you're not. I'm going to beat it for you.
You have to.
Yeah, like, no, you're not. I'm going to beat it for you. So I just hope that they fix that and they don't mess with the story too much. I hope that it seems that Jennifer Hale is going to come back to reprise her role as Bastila, which is cool. That's really exciting.
Are they doing like full new voice lines and stuff too? Is that
they would have to?
Oh wow.
Because yeah, there are segments of the OG game that are voice acted. Mm-hmm. Bastila's voice acted. What's his face is one of the first love interests. It's a dude. He reminds me so much of Poe Dameron and Han Solo, like his type of character. God, what's his name? I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. I guess
he's played by Caden. Like
for me, I never know if a remake means like. Like what are they keeping? What are they getting rid of?
Yeah.
And I guess if it's ground up, it makes sense that they would.
I just want it to be more like a Resident Evil remake. Think about that.
Okay.
Like Resident
Take
Evil
it.
Remake was so successful because it was still Resident Evil.
Update
but...
it, but keep it what made it special.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Add to it.
That's all I want.
Don't change
I just
it up
want
too
better
much.
Instead
cars.
Of yeah
yes.
that cars. Instead of like a Final Fantasy VII remake, which completely changed up like the story
Everything.
And added new implications. Yeah.
Seems
but
like
I
a...
like that too.
No, I
like a lot of people did enjoy the new system.
I
did enjoy that also, but I think that for KOTOR, if they
Enix
went,
is a company that can get away with.
Yeah,
that.
I think if
yeah.
if I think if
See,
KOTOR
that would
went
scare
that route, it would
anime.
Scare me. I agree.
Like, if I was, and I'm not, I haven't played the original Final Fantasy, I haven't played the remake, I haven't played any of that. Or I tried to play the first one, but it wasn't my cup of tea right away. But if I was a fan of Final Fantasy and then I saw like that combat system, it would scare the hell out of me.
I heard
it actually translated pretty well.
It
so,
translated,
like,
yeah, totally.
So that would worry me. If I was a KOTOR fan, I would be similarly worried. Like, ooh, don't change it too much. You know what I mean? But for me, honestly, this is like a decent, I'm kind of excited about this because it's like, oh, it's an excuse for me to like be like, okay, let me play KOTOR because I know I'm supposed to. Especially as a PC gamer, it's like, how dare you not play KOTOR? But yeah, we'll see.
I'm excited. All good stuff. That's all the stuff that that Sony announced. So it looks like they're bringing the heat, so to speak. So really excited to see what the new year brings for Sony, and hopefully a lot of this stuff comes to PC. Again, foreshadowing for a future news item. Because, you know, if you don't have a PS5 right now, chances are you're probably not going to get one for a while because chip shortages will continue, and so will the hardware shortages.
Yeah. Sony exclusive? Is it going to be on PC? Oh, we made a little shan again. Jack, is it going to be on PC too? It is, right? Or Windows at least? I don't know if Windows counts as PC or whatever the hell, but
I think we might have lost. You are correct.
It will be on PC. Okay. Well, at least there's that.
I believe so. Yeah. So, lots of good stuff coming. Let us go into our second news item. We did spend a good bit on that first one because there was just a lot to unpack there in that Sony press conference. So let's just jump right into the second one. Twitch is finally actually doing something about these hate raids, which have become kind of a common thing since the beginning of, I think, August. Hold on, let me just resize some windows because Shan just said in chat it's okay, just rap without me. So for everyone listening, Shan might not be joining us for the rest of the podcast, so we'll just go through the rest of these news items really quick. Garrett, while I resize these windows, yes, could you intro this item for us?
Certainly. So I think we briefly talked about this on the episode before Devotion. And I think it was, I don't know if we did. I don't, you guys might've talked about it. We chose not to stream along with a bunch of people.
We did
Twitch, basically doing like a sit out or a walkout as far as streaming. But basically, so there's been like these sort of like hate raids, which is generally targeting people in the LGBTQ community as well as people of color. But I'm sure it has been used against all sorts of people on Twitch. That being said, there was that kind of like, I keep calling it a walkout, but I guess it's just like a no stream day.
Yeah,
right?
It was like people just staying off of Twitch entirely.
Yeah, and it's funny, I actually talked to Tim about this, and like I never know how effective those are, but apparently it was effective because Twitch actually did something for once, so that's kind of nice. But essentially, Twitch did kind of like respond to that day a little bit from what I heard. I was watching a guy on Twitch and he was talking about how there was like response coming and stuff. But they actually ended up, I believe it's two from what I read before. I think it was two specific users, right? That were named in a suit that Twitch filed, I think in California. And basically like it was, I think they banned the user's accounts, and they apparently these guys like operate multiple accounts and have thousands of bots, and they were, you know, at least part of this sort of like hate raid kind of a thing, which is not like this happens everywhere, right? There's all sorts of shit where people use bots and so on and so forth. It was really just the fact that Twitch didn't seem to be doing anything about it. So my personal reaction to this is like, at least Twitch is acknowledging this is an issue, and at least they're taking a step. I know I believe the no play day was asking for specific actions as far as like control over users, the ability to filter users by creation date, which is I think would solve a large part of the problem with these sort of bot raids where they can just make millions is crazy, but like hundreds or thousands of accounts very easily to do it. So my personal reaction is like, well, at least Twitch is doing something, you know what I mean? Like it is kind of weird, especially considering the resources at Amazon's disposal, that this was kind of just like ignored for a long time, especially because these are basically people making money for you. So, you know, I think this is at least a step in the right direction. I can't see anyone being upset with this news, certainly. Is it enough? Probably not, but at least Twitch seems to be doing something about it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's a step in the right direction, certainly. And like you mentioned, for a company like Amazon that has that amount of resources at their disposal, to me, like, this is kind of like the bare minimum that they should be doing, where it gives you greater control over you can, you know, how you moderate your chat, and, you know, going after if they've identified users who have been, like, who are the people that they're like, okay, we know that you guys are creating these thousands of accounts for hate raids, like, ban them flat out, right? And again, that probably is just, you know, just plugging the hole with your finger while the dam is about to break, because then they can just create a new email account and create more spam bots and whatnot. Yeah. But at least it shows that they're doing something. And like you said, it's a step in the right direction. And I think Twitch should definitely be investing more into this, because it's just an ever-growing problem.
Yeah. I mean, and this is, again, it's not really specific to Twitch, this kind of problem, because as we've seen, you know, there are basically, you can DDoS anyone you want so long as you have enough money to pay, you know, hackers to do it. So, like, this is just kind of like a modern technology issue, I think, that is very difficult to solve, but it's at least Twitch is like starting, you know, at least they're trying to do something. And like Shannon's saying in chat, like, the bar is low here, but at least it's something, is what she's saying. And I think specifically targeting some of these guys, like, is a good idea, because at least, like, you know, at least there's some sort of like a little bit of justice here. Cause like I think it's good to try to nip this in the bud a little bit, because the idea that you can, you know, and I don't know if these guys were like selling it or if they were just doing it, but like the idea of someone being able to just like pay somebody to generate a billion bots to basically attack, you know, people with hate speech and shit. Like, it's pretty insane. But I mean, step in the right direction, right, Twitch? What I worry about something like this is, like, I just don't know if this problem is fully solvable. You know what I mean? In the modern age, with, you know, VPNs and all this stuff, like, you know, I don't think any government in the world has figured out, you know, a indefensible, you know, cyber hacking block. So, but like, the very least Twitch could do is A, listen to the people that make them all the money, and B, you know, try to take care of those people and try not to like ignore problems like, you know, massive hate speech attacks. So at least there's something. It's funny, Jack is making fun of the amount of tabs you have.
These are all the news items that we're talking about, and I gotta scroll through all of them so we can get different perspectives on all the news items. Tim, I haven't heard from you in a bit. You were quiet over there. What's let me get some of your thoughts here on Twitch. Do you think that Twitch is doing like some grand gesture, or do you also agree this is like, guys, this is really the least that you could be doing? You should be doing more.
I mean, I'm under the completely sardonic opinion that everything that Twitch does is grand gestures, and that literally there's so many ways they could prevent this without having to, you know, like, say to the community, like, we're working on it. Like, this, I'm not, you know, an expert programmer, but this has to be something they can easily prevent. And I get that the bot makers are evading, you know, the techniques that Twitch is doing to by altering their code and stuff like that. But come on, like, Twitch is so has so much money. Like, please,
like, just allow, like, generate a filter that just allows you to filter
right,
like, by account, like, date. That should be something that Twitch can do.
I've heard that creators are using like external plugins to be able to do that. And it's like, why do they have to do that? Like,
Like the fact that somebody can externally develop that doesn't have billions of dollars at their disposal is kind of like, okay, Twitch, like, you sued two guys, like, at least it's something, but like, come on. Like, that being said, I assume Twitch is working on that. If they aren't, it's kind of like, come on, guys, please. But
hopefully this is a start of a sustained effort and movement by Twitch. But again, I think I'm going to piggyback off of in sardonic response, in that this is like the grand show of gestures, like, hey, look, we did something, and then that's going to stop until this picks up steam again, in which case Twitch is like, oh, wait, they're getting angry again, let's show like we're doing something.
What's cheaper, you know, this little gesture or actually fixing the problem?
And it's possible, like, to be fair, it is possible, like, the database wasn't designed to handle that kind of a thing or something. You know, I'm not that familiar with programming, but, like, I could understand it not being like an overnight fix, but like, I like it. It just seems, it seems logically easy to me for like a giant
even,
company.
Even if it's not Amazon logically money. Easy to actually like, if it takes time to do an architecture fix or whatever the case may be, like this should be something that I figure that the higher ups and the executives at Twitch should be like, we need to prioritize this because it's like, it's a black eye on us PR wise. Yeah. And yeah. Potentially we're going to lose.
The thing is, I
feel
like Twitch has never really given a shit about PR. It looks like the stuff that Twitch has done is by and large been like really not great. So like maybe they just don't give a fuck and it still makes them millions and millions of dollars. So like,
speaking of,
at least it's something.
Speaking of other companies that just don't give a fuck. I don't know if you heard, but Epic had sued Apple some time ago, and we just recently got the verdict from that lawsuit. And for the most part, Epic, you know, lost on a bunch of the counts that they brought to court. The courts ruled against them for the charges that they were bringing up, but they did get one win that went in their favor, and that was to say that. Where is it here on the notes? Apple must pay. No, Apple's App Store is the only way to install. No, here it is. U.S. District Judge Yvonne Gonzalez-Rogers ruled Friday that Epic failed to prove that Apple is monopolistic and as such it owes Apple revenue. So that's basically saying that when they tried to circumvent Apple's Apple's paying option by offering their own in-app purchases in Fortnite, that they did so against Apple. So now they owe all that back money to Apple. So sucks for you, Epic. You got to pay them. But the judge did rule that Apple forcing developers to use their payment systems was sort of a monopolistic practice. So they can't force developers to use the App Store as sort of their purchasing. They shouldn't route all users and developers to that. They should be free to use other payment methods if it's cheaper for the developers or if it's easier for the developers to implement any kind of APIs that use outside payment methods. So that one was like the big win, which means that Apple no longer is the gatekeeper for all payments. But Epic did have to pay, you know, a couple million bucks over to Apple for them trying to go around the App Store in the first place. People are saying it's like a win for the both of them because Epic really gets the one key win in that method of payment is no longer gatekept. By Apple, but then Apple wins because now they get all
gate cooped.
But now they get like 3.6 million in back pay from Epic.
Yeah,
from Epic.
I gotta be honest. When you texted us about this, and I googled it quick, and I think it was like Kotaku, but I just like to blame Kotaku for everything. Kotaku had like an article, and it was like Epic wins lawsuit against Apple. I'm like, this is the opposite of a win, in my opinion. The fact that like. Because at the end of the day, Apple can still be like, yeah, you just can't put your shit on our store. Like that, the judge was basically like, yeah, you're allowed to do that. You're not a monopoly. This is not antitrust.
Very true.
And it's kind of like, okay, so Apple still has all the power. So the fact that like, okay, Epic, if you want to go on the Apple store, you could be like, hey, buy V-Bucks from us. But Apple doesn't have to let you back on their store. So it's sort of like, I don't see this as a win for Epic at all. I do see it as a possible win for small, you know, companies.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
Are on
when
the
I
Apple
said it's
store.
Like a win for Epic, I meant like it's a win in Epic's favor that the one main thing where they're like, hey, you guys can't hold on to like the payment, like hold the keys to the payment gate. Everyone like has to be free to choose other payment methods for whatever apps are on your store. It can't just be through you guys. That was like the big key win. But then again, like you said, that doesn't.
And that's, it's sort of like a, okay, like that's cool and all, but like everything else was a loss for Epic, I think. And just kind of like, it's foolish to say these aren't monopolies. I know. Okay. If you don't like Apple, go to Android, right? Like, yeah, there's three competitors like, but that's kind of monopolies, you know, so like it is interesting that any sort of favor was ruled in Epic's way, but like it's just sort of like a weird, but Apple can still do whatever the fuck they want, so like maybe it's a win for very small developers, but I don't think so, because Apple could still be like, okay, if you advertise not to buy from our store, you're not allowed on the Apple, you know, whatever mobile market or whatever. So I don't really think this is a win for anybody but Apple, because essentially they're still in control of anything. Again, you could just, you know, go to Android or whatever, but you can't go to Google because I think Epic also sued Google for the same thing. So, like, I assume they're not going to win that one. So I don't know. It's tough for me because I kind of just fucking hate Epic Games, and they make so much money. Like, just build your own goddamn store. Like, I don't understand. Like, if you want the iPhone user base, I'm sorry, that's Apple stuff.
But see, here's the problem: like, if they build their own app store, you're probably going to shit on that too, just like you shit on their games launcher.
Yeah, well, yeah, Epic sucks. But you know what I mean? Like, it's a billion-dollar company crying about a trillion-dollar company. Like, I don't care about either of those companies and their feelings or how much money they want to make. That's what I hate, is that Epic pretends like everything they do is for the little guy. And yeah, sure, some of it is, but I think most of it is just so Epic can make money and pretend like they're like the good guys in this situation. Which I guess in the situation they're gooder than
Apple. They're the lesser of the two evils.
They're the lesser of the two evils, if you will. That's just my, you know, I don't like Apple, I don't like Epic, so it's easy for me to be like, yeah, I don't care. Lost Worm makes an amazing joke in chat. Thank you, Lost Worm. It's funny because I know we talked about this way back in the day when they originally filed suit, and I don't think my opinion has really changed either. But it's funny, Jack saying all that matters is that Epic is punching up. Yeah, I guess it's like the more evil company is they're attacking them. But like, I mean, evil's relative here, but
we'll see what kind of implications this has, because they did note also in one of the articles that I read that this verdict does have implications on other pending lawsuits that are going on as far as antitrust in the video game world. They mentioned an indie developer that's suing Valve. There's a class action lawsuit against Sony, alleging the console maker overcharged on PlayStation 5 games. So this ruling and what the judge ruled on these specific implications might actually set precedent for some of the decisions made in those cases. So yeah. Who knows? Maybe we'll see a wave of these types of decisions and other pending legislation for video games.
It's interesting because Jack Benson in chat, like there's and I think Shannon talked about it too, where it's like, there's this kind of ripples out into the industry, right? So like things like Twitch, things like I'm sure YouTube's like in similar, you know, category. I know YouTube just took down like GroovyBot on Discord and stuff. So you're having these weird, interesting, like kind of huge tech, let's call them monopolies, because they're as good as that, kind of battling each other for allowing users to have better stuff, but like restricting them at the same time. So it's like an interesting warfare going on right now with the, what I would call like the digital, consumption era, of where it's like things are now in the digital space. Right. So it's not about having brick and mortar stores anymore or whatever.
Curious to see where this, curious to see how the dominoes fall in off the back of this legislation.
Yeah.
Quick question for you guys on the next news item. Do you guys feel like taking a news item where we shit on a company and then end on a possibly happy note, or do you want to end by shitting on a company?
To me, we've been shitting on this company for a while, so I'm just going to be very quick on that one. So,
Tim, any thoughts which way we lean with the next two news items?
Yeah, I mean,
all right.
I'm indifferent.
All right, let's go. Garrett, shit away. Activision Blizzard, guess what? We said they suck. We've known they sucked for a while. The last time we talked about them was because of the heinous bro culture and just completely misogynistic and discriminatory workplace environment that that they were fostering. There was a walkout, so that was the last thing we talked about Activision Blizzard. And guess what? We're talking about them again, because now news has been coming out by the Communications Workers of America.
As I mentioned at the onset of the show, this episode was filled with technical issues, and it was at this point that the recording cut out and Twitch stopped, so we restarted it. So what you're going to hear immediately next is when the guys and I restarted the episode.
interesting because maybe that'll help me with my edit later.
Certainly, yeah. Let's just like do. Oh, we might be back on Twitch, but like, who cares? Let's just see if before
it'll,
the whole
it'll help. It'll help me with the edit. All right.
Yeah.
Three, two, one.
Anti-union.
All right, cool. So the last thing I said before my internet crapped out and Twitch decided to shut us down because we were shitting on them was not more than a few weeks after the news came out about their misogynistic work practices and their toxic work environment. Now they're actively busting possible unionization within their own company, and they were caught red-handed by doing that. Activision Blizzard just can't keep their name out of the news. Not too long ago, we talked about the heinous conditions. Yeah, we just mentioned that. Communication Workers of America accusing Blizzard of illegal union busting tactics, according to a complaint now before the National Labor Relations Board. Activision Blizzard, like, you guys, have you ever seen that episode of The Simpsons that spoofs Welcome to Cape Fear with Sideshow yes. Bob? You know that one scene where he's like riding underneath the car to try and kill Bart, and then he finally unhooks himself from under the car.
I thought it was gonna be the rakes.
That's exactly what it is. So after he gets out from under the car, he's walking out and is constantly smacking himself in the face with rakes. This is exactly Blizzard. That is Sideshow Bob is Blizzard, and literally every shitty thing that they should be avoiding by like not being a shitty company, like not union busting, by not being a toxic workplace, they're actively running into those at full fucking speed.
Mm. I, in that regard, right? Because we could talk to death about how shitty things are at Blizzard and the conditions and et cetera. I kind of think that's just the nature of like when a story like this starts to get out, it's this house of cards falling down, right? Like where it's just like, okay, obviously something's deeply wrong in the company somewhere and you're just going to see the fallout effects of it. And I mean, it's Activision, you know, Activision kind of ruined everything. Blizzard was one of my favorite companies ever. Now they're not. The one thing I do want to say that's slightly new about this is like, I was looking through the games release list so I could figure out what game was coming out soon that I was excited about, which is the Outer Wilds DLC, just so you know. And Diablo 2 Remaster was on there. I was like, fuck, like I'm tempted to play Diablo 2 Remaster, but like it's, you know, supporting Blizzard and Activision sucks. And I remember, I think Tim brought it up, like the employees at Blizzard Activision are kind of like, but we made these games and we made them with love, so like please support the game still. And it's like, oh, like you know, I don't want to make money for scumbags like, you know, the Activision side of the company, but I also like, you know, if these programmers made a good game and they made it with love and like they, you know, it's tough, it's a tough thing, you know what I mean. That being said, I'm very cautious when it comes to after Warcraft 3 remake of going anywhere near a different remake, but like, you know what I mean, it's like kind of a weird, it's like, well, like if the developers made a good game and they like they're the low level people that really had nothing to do with this, like is it do you still support the game, you know? I don't know, just a moral quandary I wanted to throw out there. Because like,
way to make it honest, like, shit on Diablo, this company.
Sorry, I'm not trying to make, you know, make this into again, fuck Blizzard, Activision, fuck all this shit. And I don't know why I'm cursing all of a sudden, but like, you know what I mean, like there's games out there to support and so on and so forth. And like, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure the Diablo remaster will be shit because like Warcraft 3 was one of the worst things to ever happen. But who knows, you know, it's just a quandary I wanted to throw out there. That being said, Blizzard Activision sucks. We all know this. We've talked about this for weeks now.
Yeah, it's kind of a running joke.
I don't think people are going to stop talking about it. I think more stuff's going to keep coming out, to be honest. So boo them.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's kind of a running joke at this point. If we don't, if we go like two or three episodes without actively shitting on Blizzard, then something is wrong. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, it's unfortunately Blizzard Activision shitting on has replaced the Reggie Fils-Aimé cocaine jokes.
he's not in video games anymore. We can't. There's nothing to talk about.
Tim, you have to pet your cat a bunch, by the way.
Yeah, there's a bunch of pet the cats.
So I don't know if it's worth talking about more.
I mean, it really is, and it was just another note to be like, guys, like you literally were in the news not that long ago, and like if you're trying to get people to forget about how shitty your company is, and weather the storm. This is not the way to do it. Stop being a shitty company, which we know is not going to happen because Bobby Kotick is a terrible human
being.
They
hired the lawyer team they hired was like an anti-union team immediately after the initial things kind of came out.
And also they hired somebody who was involved in like that whole waterboarding thing. They were like,
oh Jesus.
Yeah. One of the people that they hired into actively their HR management or like their compliance team was like a waterboarding apologist when that was a thing in the government. So yeah, that just goes to show you what kind of a shitty company.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. They were trying to defend the waterboarding tactics. They're like, we had to do that. It's like shitty people.
Speaking of waterboarding, there's a big leak.
I was wondering where that was the segue
I was born for.
That was Garrett. This was your moment. You scared me for a second, but you know what? You know what? It came out, and it couldn't have happened any other way.
Yeah,
there was a leak, and we were talking about this earlier when we were talking about God of War possibly being available on other platforms outside of PlayStation. Yeah, there was a giant list that leaked from the GeForce. What was it? GeForce Now.
The GeForce Now platform, which I believe is their Google Stadia.
Yeah,
I think, right? Okay.
It's their Google Stadia, but like good.
Yeah,
but success.
I've heard it's amazing. I've wanted to try it.
Not good technically because Google Stadia technically worked. It just they didn't know what to do with it. But anyhow, this story is there was a giant leak, a shit ton of games listed out, and Nvidia came out and said yes, that list is legit. The list had literally like what was it like hundreds or at least thousands of games.
There was a tremendous amount of things on there. I actually put this on GitHub. It's more of like go check it out because there's a lot of like interesting, spicy possible games in there. I know for me, like there's like a Dragon's Dogma 2 in there. I'm like, ooh, like that's exciting. Demon's Souls possibly being on PC, God of War possibly being ported to PC, stuff like that. Take it with a grain of salt because there are things on there that were just like weird code names for games that have come out that were named differently. I forget.
There was like a BioShock 2022. There was
sequel of a game, but it was actually just a different game that came out and stuff.
Yeah, and then Nvidia.
Also,
go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Also, that being said, there are some games on this list that like are now announced and stuff. So maybe it's true.
Yeah.
But you could just Google literally Nvidia leak games list and go check it out. There's like a lot of interesting stuff on there. There's no Bloodborne for PC, which would be the thing that I would be the most excited about. But go check it out. There's a ton of stuff and there's some weird stuff in there too, obviously. Nvidia in their statement was like, okay, this leak is legit. It did come from us. However, we do not confirm or deny any of the games on there. Blah, blah, blah,
yeah, cetera, yeah. And they also said like to kind of like even further hedge and cover their bases. They're like, you know, yeah, sometimes we put lists together like this just to like mock it up and see what things are going to look like. It doesn't mean that these are actually games that are in development or that, you know, we have any advanced knowledge of. So they're literally doing everything to try and cover their bases to be like, these games are just not real or we're just doing this to test capabilities. But like Garrett mentioned, some of these games are already games that have been announced and that we know to be coming to PC at some point. And some games are just
The biggest ones are the PC ones for PC players where it's sort of like, oh, it seems like Sony's like, if there's any part of this is real, or at least Nvidia is anticipating that Sony is going to continue to port more games over. Which is cool for PC PC enthusiast. Dragon's Dogma 2. That's the Shannon. I saw that. I was like, all right, I'm in. I'll play that stupid game. But yes, go check it out. I'm not gonna like read the list out at this point, but
Final Fantasy Online, the Korean version. Kingdom Under Fire. Where's Final Fantasy 16? Because I remember in the article that I read they did mention,
I think 16 was in there, yeah.
Yeah, Final Fantasy 16 was mentioned.
It's been announced in them. It's not like
not for PC.
Exactly. That was listed under PC. Oh,
yeah. I think it was listed.
Okay.
So that's why I was like, "Ooh, this is." Demon's Souls, Final Fantasy VII Remake, and Returnal also, which are all.
Tim, can I ask you the Demon's Souls Remake? Does that interest you at all? Like, if that did come out on PC, would you be into that?
Yeah, I mean, I thought about it. My friend has a PS5.
Okay.
I thought about playing.
because I, from what I haven't played it, but from what I saw, I was like, oh, I didn't love what they were doing as far as like visually. It seemed like they were like not capturing the Demon Souls atmosphere, if you will. But
I mean, when it comes to games like that, that I did love a lot, but I haven't played for a long time, it comes back to the whole thing you're saying before. It's like, yeah, it's just an excuse to play it again.
It's an excuse to and, try it out again. Yeah.
You know, if things were a little bit different, like whatever, like I probably wouldn't have gone back to play it without it. So at least I can see the differences.
Served its purpose, if you will. The Resident Evil 4 remake is on there, which Shannon has been, I think, the entire run of Split Screen Cinex basically praying for. So boulder punching. Hold on, Jack. That was Resident Evil 5 was boulder punching, if I'm not mistaken. but HD
Kingsglaive
boulder punching.
Final Fantasy 15. I'm actually weirdly one of the fans of Final Fantasy 15. I enjoyed the game, and I watched the Kingsglaive movie, and I actually enjoyed Kingsglaive also. So a Kingsglaive game would be dope.
Oh. Sure.
Sorry, I'm just looking through the list for Final Fantasy 15. Or for Final Fantasy stuff.
Final Fantasy, you're outnumbered on the Final Fantasy 15 thing. I bet you Sarah shows up in chat. Just he always shows up when we rag on Final Fantasy 15.
BioShock RTX remaster. Ooh, BioShock 2020. Yeah, this is the game that BioShock 2022. Who knows what that means?
Yeah.
But yeah, if you know,
go check it out. It's spicy.
Definitely check out the list. There's definitely games here that have been confirmed for PC. Obviously, some others that are like, what the fuck does this mean? But if even half of these games are like legit games that are coming to the GeForce Now, that would be dope. And this is not really a news item. I just included it as the last thing because it was kind of a little happy thing. The GameCube is actually 20 years old, I think, as of yesterday, the 14th. 20 years ago, on the 14th of September, there was a little handheld. I guess it is kind of handheld if you think about it.
It's got the little...
A little console handle. Came out with weird little discs that played. It was called the GameCube, and it had this odd-looking controller, which now has become sort of like the gold standard for Smash tournaments. Like, if you play a Smash tournament, you want one of these controllers. And it had a little console. It had a little handle on a console. You can carry it around anywhere. The thing took a beating. The thing could, like, take a dive, and you'd set it right back up, and it would still play.
Nintendium, dude.
It would...
Back
it was,
when Nintendium was still available.
Built like a rock. I stop discussing how bad Final Fantasy 15 is. I enjoyed it.
I knew you were trying to change the subject.
I know. I'm like, I saw the comment and I'm like, oh.
Lukewarm take. I think the GameCube was like an absolutely phenomenal system with an amazing games library. Because I know it's not too spicy.
But. Yeah, it definitely got overshadowed by, you know, the other consoles. Yeah, and not just that, and then when the Wii came out, the Wii was like such a commercial success that kind of, you know, people forgot about the GameCube and how awesome the GameCube really was. But yeah, 20 years old, still not old enough to drink, still not old enough to rent a car or get a discount on car insurance, but hey, 20 years old, not bad.
Kitty purring into the podcast mic is amazing.
What was
it? Do you hear Ben purring in the mic?
Yeah, I was like, what is that?
It's adorable.
That is adorable.
Play us out, Ben. Play us out.
This is gonna be the episode intro. I'm just gonna cut that out, and isolate the purring, and that's gonna be the intro.
Just fill all the voids where we went down and fell in, and just fill it with Ben purring.
Instead of listening to you guys, like, did we lose Berto? I think we lost Berto or us going.
It's our most downloaded episode ever.
It's just gonna be like, it's gonna a hard cut cat purring, and then we're back.
Yeah, he does look really happy, Ben. Good job for that cat.
Garrett, you want to play us out? That was the end of the episode. That was the last news item I had. I figured we went.
Happy birthday, GameCube.
Heavy news week, and happy birthday, GameCube. 20 years old.
Thank you for Smash Bros. and you know, other games.
And other games like Wind Waker. You know,
I wouldn't worry about those. quick reminder. Because I panic picked it right before we started the podcast. Death's Door is going to be the Game Club game, which I've been meaning to play, and I think I might stream. So this is going to make me stream it. So there's that. most likely we will do that 2 weeks from now, I think, because I think it's like 10 hours.
I was playing.
I don't think it's like crazy long.
No, I think I'm about 60% of the way through, and I have like 8 or 9 hours in it. And if you look at my Steam counter, it says like I have 40 hours, but I think that's because when I quit the desktop, it just goes to the title screen and it stays there all night.
Left it on. Yeah, yeah. So. I do that all the time.
Yeah, so I think the game is like,
I leave it on.
I think it's like a 10-hour game, 10 to 15 hours, more to the 15 side if you're like looking to do all the collectibles and get all the weapon upgrades and all that stuff. Yeah. It's a relatively short game.
But yeah, I assume it'd be good for 2 weeks from now. So that's going to be our Game Club game. Mm-hmm. Play it. Ask us about it. You know, it's Game Club. You know the rules or whatever. No rules, just right. but yeah, Death's Door, next Game Club game. Thank you for listening. Episode 81. Thank you guys in chat for showing up. We missed you guys. Thanks for making Tim pet his cat. Thank you, Tim's cat, Ben, for the audio. And yeah, Berto, where can people find you at?
You can find me at Albie the One and Only pretty much on all the socials. And by all the socials, I mean just Twitter and Instagram. Those are the two that I most frequent. And I also am the man behind the door on the Split Screen Cynics Twitter account. So you can find me there.
Man behind Death's Door, because you've been streaming and on Twitch. I'm twitch.tv/GarrettGetsInto. I guess I just made a promise to stream. I don't know when, but it'll be Death's Door. Tim, where can people find you at? And what are your closing thoughts?
Keep on gaming.
Hey.
Bye.
Bye.